and welcome to episode 58 of Divided by Werewolves. This is the pre-Halloween show, not pre-Halloween in terms of the show before we see Halloween. It's the show before the holiday Halloween, which that was a really weird way for me to say that. But we are going to talk about Halloween, but I saw today in the news there's a push for people. They want to make Halloween the last Saturday in October, and frankly, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Do your kids still go out? Well, Katie does, right?
Yeah. We go trick-or-treating every year. I don't know. Part of me wants it to be on the traditional 31st because I like the date. But the old man in me would be like, fuck yes, please, Saturday.
Right. I mean, it's just easy. It's just like, you know, like when, you know, when 4th of July is, you know, on a Wednesday, and you're like, great, I get a Thursday off. But, you know, it's you know, if they said, okay, 4th of July is the first Friday in July, you know, whatever, something like that. But anyway, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know what, how you would even legislate something like that. But I'm all for it. So let's make it happen. Even though I don't go out anymore and I don't care. So I just like imposing my will on other people is what it comes down to. Okay. So we have a lot of spooky, scary things that we're going to talk about, this week. We're going to get into Apostle, with the Gareth Evans, Dan Stevens movie on Netflix. We're going to get into Haunting of Hill House, the Mike Flanagan, show on Netflix, and of course we're going to talk about the amazing Halloween Jamie Lee Curtis and Judy Greer. But before we do that, both Mitch and I had the absolute privilege of each co-hosting an episode of Cinematological, which is our buddy Darvin, Darvin11 on Twitter. He does this great show where he takes a movie that is historically shat upon, and the Church of the Moving Picture convinces you why it's a good movie. So it's a celebration of movies that may historically be considered bad, and it's just a way to show appreciation for movies that maybe not everybody likes, and also to let you know that it's okay to like bad movies. We all have movies that maybe the mainstream press and opinion are not very positive about, but it's okay to like them. So I recorded an episode for Too Fast, Too Furious, which is going to be in November. But Mitch, he co-hosted what I'm going to let you explain movie you did.
So for the Halloween episode, it kind of came up. He mentioned something or tweeted something, and it's in similar fashion to how you got on for the Too Fast, Too Furious. He mentioned that he liked this finger quote bad movie, and I was like, well, I fucking love that movie. Mm-hmm. And he's like, maybe you should guest host for the Halloween episode. And I was like, well, maybe I should, because I will be damned if Jason X isn't a fucking fantastic movie.
And I gotta tell you, that episode was amazing. First of all, you were great. And he did such a great job with the editing and everything about it. I've never seen Jason X. The set that I have ends with Jason Takes Manhattan. So Jason Goes to Hell, I've seen Freddy versus Jason. I've not seen Jason Goes to Hell, and I haven't seen Jason X. And I was like, God damn, that's going on the list for Christmas, those last three, because that movie looked fun as hell.
It's so fucking good. I don't know. We're going to talk about Jason X. Just go watch Cinematological.
Yeah.
Watch the episode, because even if you hate Jason X, we do our best to show you why it's awesome.
And it was a great episode. And like I said, you guys were fantastic together. It was fun to watch. There was a lot of great points made on it. He does a great job with the editing of the movie. And it's on YouTube, but YouTube is an asshole with content strikes. So go to Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, the platform there, and it's Cinema, so CinemaTological, Cinematological. You can also follow him on Twitter at the same handle, and then if you want to follow his personal account, it's Darvin11. And the Twitter, the Insta, definitely check it out. He's got a lot of great movies, like Godzilla,
Orca.
Oh, what's the one? The Kiss the Thumb. What's that one? God, I can't remember. It's like an old science fiction movie, but I can't remember it.
Oh, he's got, he did Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah,
that was Keanu.
Yeah, that was one before you. Shit, I'll look it up.
Waterworld's one of them.
Yep.
I can't remember. I've seen them all. I've seen them all more than once. That's how good. It's like, it's criminal. Like, that it's not a more popular channel on YouTube. And it sucks that YouTube's such an asshole with the content strikes and that. Mm-hmm. Because he deserves such a bigger audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see. What is the movie? It is. Let's see. The Godzilla. It's not that one. 2012 is one of them.
Yeah. I watched that again after watching because I'd only seen that once.
Uh huh.
And he's right. It's fucking fun.
All right. Let's see.
So I know he listens to the show. I've actually I've had comments from people after watching Jason X who have suggested other movies for him as well. So I need to talk to him because somebody brought up Last Action Hero, and
oh yeah.
I'll co-host the fuck out of that one if he wants to do that one too, or he can do it by himself.
You know what? That's on you, dude. I suggested Ninja Assassin because I think that's a fucking great movie that nobody knows about, and most people would be like, "Ah, who gives a shit?" I love that movie. I think it's fucking fantastic.
Yep.
Okay. Real quick, games related. Real quick. So the first of three. Spider-Man DLC packs. Well, the pack itself is called City Never Sleeps, and it's three stories that all supposedly kind of tied together. You can buy them individually. So that came out on Tuesday, and I've been playing that. And I hate to sound like the laziest reviewer ever, but if you like Spider-Man, you'll like him. There's a lot of stuff that's the same. You know, you still can fight crimes. The stories or suits. There's some new challenges, which are actually not bad. They're kind of a twist on some of the Taskmaster stuff. But more importantly, there's more more of them and more crimes to do. So for the challenges in particular, if there were suits or gadgets you either missed out on or couldn't upgrade because maybe you couldn't hit all of the gold and the challenges like you needed to, it gives you some extra challenge tokens so you can get that stuff. But I mean, and the Black Cat is in this one. I don't know. They haven't said who's in the other two. But I mean, it's not like a huge departure from what's already there. So like if you played Spider-Man and put in all the time and the work and you were like, you know what, I'm great, I'm good, then it's not really going to give you anything more. But Spider-Man's a great game, so having more of it is good. But
do you play as Black Cat or are you still Spidey?
Not yet. Oh, okay. Anyway, maybe you will at some point, but not yet.
Gotcha. I don't know if it was like the Catwoman DLC for Batman. Like
no, Batman. That would be awesome. And maybe you that do. Was fucking I haven't gotten that far into it.
Gotcha.
So, okay. So we have a ton of stuff to talk about. Really good stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Is very excited about this show. Positivity rules. First up, let's do Apostle, because I think I think for me personally, that probably of the three, that's the one that's kind of lower.
Right. And on paper, never would have thought so.
Yeah.
I like Mike Flanagan. I love Mike Flanagan, but like Gareth, I mean, my God.
Yeah, you watch The Raid? I mean, that movie is fucking, that's poetry.
And Dan Stevens?
I gotta say, no one does a better, like, that kind of head down, fucked up, eye glower better than Dan Stevens. Like, the thing, I love, absolutely love the fact that my introduction to Dan Stevens was The Guest.
Same, yep.
Because when you see him in that movie, and then the turn comes, you're like, holy shit. If I had seen him in Legion and I had seen him in Apostle and then watched him in The Guest, I'd be like, there is no way this motherfucker is on the level. So I love Dan Stevens. I mean, The Guest is one of my absolute favorite movies. So yeah, so on paper, I kind of thought, okay, you know, this weird kind of dark, you know, Wicker Man esque type of movie by the guy who did The Raid, and then with Dan Stevens, it's going to be fucking amazing. And it was good.
It's good.
I think, like, I know you really liked what's the one where they go in the woods? Is it the Netflix exclusive where the guy they go in the
Ritual? Wood?
Yeah, The Ritual.
Like, oh, hell yeah.
You're a bigger fan of that than I am. To me, this was kind of on that level. Like, it was good. It was worth watching. But it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, or what I kind of as good as I thought it would be, given kind of everything around it.
Yeah, same here. And it's funny because I typically wouldn't say this, but this one I kind of felt like if it had, and I don't want to spoil it, but if it ended on the down note that it looked like it was going to, I think I would have liked it better.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
The ending ended up just being like, okay, like I just don't get it. I didn't get it.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
You know, and that was disappointing because if it had just ended on the down note, and because at that point I was fucking destroyed, like I was crushed, and I was like, you know, probably that should probably be where it's over. Like, just do it there. You know, just you know, crush our spirits and be done with it. Like,
right. Yes, I agree. And then the way that it ended, it was just weird. It didn't really, for me anyway, it didn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-mm.
You know, and again, I don't want to spoil it because I think it's still worth watching.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it just didn't, I didn't understand, like you said, like what that was supposed to mean.
Right. I don't understand. Like, I didn't understand it when it was what it was before. And then I guess he was the chosen one, and then he was supposed to come and do what he did. And then
I never got that at all.
I don't. Yeah. I enjoyed the entire ride, but and maybe I need to read about it. Like, cause the other two things we're going to talk about, I did a lot of reading about them after. And this one I kind of didn't. And I don't know if there's something, you know, that I'm just an idiot and I didn't get it. But like, you know, I enjoyed the nearly 2 hours that led up to the last 5 minutes. And then I was just like, huh.
Yeah. That's basically how I was. And there's some brutal, you know, there's kind of some brutal stuff.
It's got what you expect from Garrett. This, it's got the, you know, there's brutal violence. You know, not obviously not, you know, choreographed fight scenes that you got in the raid 2, but, it's fucking, it's violent, man. And, it's graphic.
I have a newfound appreciation for spears. I can tell you that much. Holy yes, shit. Sir.
Jesus Christ. That happened. Well, that escalated quickly too.
But that guy was like, for King it. Blah! I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
Like, wow, they keep those things sharp.
They do. And they are quick to use them. Like,
and then just the way, like that whole scene, and that's the thing, like that happens kind of early on. And then, like the, you know, when he was, you know, there's one part where he's hiding and he kind of meets somebody where he's hiding, and that was fucking freaky as hell. And, you know, so then, you know, kind of the way it ended was just like, what? I don't understand it. But,
and like, we're kind of skipping the plot altogether, but basically, like, these people have fled England and they're wanted and they're running out of money, and they had this land, and they, you know, they're like, oh, well, the land will provide all we need. And they have this lady, this weird witch lady or something, who they feed blood to, and she gives them sustenance, like the harvest and this and that, and it's not working. So they end up kidnapping Dan Stevens' character's sister, and they're attempting to blackmail, you know, because they're from money, and they're attempting to get a ransom to keep things afloat. And Dan Stevens goes over, even though he and his father have had a falling out, he agrees to go over there and bring her back. Which if you tell me that, and you tell me Gareth Evans, and you tell me Dan Stevens, I'm looking for this to be my favorite movie this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I kind of wonder, this is the kind of project that makes me wonder if, just based on who it was, Dan Stevens didn't even bother to read the script. He was just like, yep, doing that. And then, because I can't imagine reading the script and being like, and not being like, there's some notes that I could get, or like,
do you know what's going on? Yeah, because I don't know what's going on.
Did you have the flu when you wrote this, maybe, or what is... And it, like, because the thing is, like, and then whoever the fuck at Netflix cut the trailer together, give that motherfucker a raise. Yeah. Because when I saw that trailer, I was just like, holy shit. Like, I was jacked. I could not fucking wait. I told you it was the wrong date a month early. That's how excited I was. I was
like, you're like, it's coming.
Yeah. We're like, what are we going to watch next? And I was like, oh shit, Gareth Evans, Dan Stevens comes out tomorrow, son. No, turns out I was a month early. But again, like we said, definitely worth watching, but don't expect to. And if you know what the fuck happened, let us know.
Please. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hit us up on Twitter or something.
Please do. So the next thing, also a Netflix exclusive, which I'm a bigger fan of, is the Haunting of Hill House. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying I have never read the book. So it's kind of a seminal horror movie. Book from the 60s, I believe.
59, I think it was.
Yeah. I forget the author's name. Shirley Jackson, I want to say.
I think that's right, yeah.
And the Haunting of Hill House, the book, is about these four people who go to Hill House, which is this kind of famous haunted house. One's a cult expert, Theo. The person's an expert on poltergeist. One is a guy Luke, he's going to be the heir to Hill House, and then I forget who the fourth person is, and then kind of things go from there. Now, whereas the Mike Flanagan show on Netflix, which is easily one of the, not only one of my favorite things that Mike Flanagan has done, but probably one of my favorite things on Netflix, is the story of this family who the parents, whose name I can't remember because I'm terrible with names.
I know Hugh.
I don't know if it's Marsha. I can't remember. But anyway, they one summer move into Hill House because they're going to renovate it and flip it. They buy Hill House with the intention of flipping it. Mm-hmm. And there's seven of them. There's Hugh, the mom, Carla Gugino, who does a fantastic job.
Olivia.
Old Hugh is played by amazingly done by Timothy Hutton, who I'm kind of a take it or leave it with him, but he's fucking fantastic in this movie.
Yes,
and then the kids. Oldest is Steve, then Cheryl, Theo, and then the twins, Nellie and Luke. And the show kind of pivots back and forth between the, not necessarily the summer that they're in Hell House, a very small kind of time period that summer, mostly focusing on their last night at Hill House, and then the present day. And this show is remarkable for two reasons. First is that it's a show that Mitch actually finished.
I finished it in 3 days.
And that's the other part, is how quickly you finished it. Typically, when we talk about these things, you know, I'll be like, oh, hey, did you watch this? And you'll say, I watched an episode, or I watched two episodes. Oh, I got to finish that. And then, but this one, the fact that you watched it first and then finished it so quickly. And when I was watching it, one thing stood out that you had said about it is that the ghosts are by far the least scary part of this show.
Yeah.
And that is 100% dead on accurate. This show is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely heartbreaking. What it does is it takes ghosts and the haunting of this house and what this house tries to do to people as a source of trauma that follows these kids around for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see how that trauma reverberates through, shapes them as people, and then ultimately brings them back to the house itself. Absolutely fantastic performances. Like, there is not a weak actor or actress in the bunch.
No.
There's some folks that have worked with Mike Flanagan before. Let me see. One of the women was in Hush. Let's see. Hold on here. Here we go. So, so of course, Carla Gugino, and I can't remember, I don't know if I pronounce her name right, Olivia, she's, you know, obviously been in a bunch of things, and she was absolutely amazing in Gerald's Game, which was the last Mike Flanagan Netflix joint. So Elizabeth Reeser, who played Shirley, she's been in a bunch of different things. She was great. She's actually in, I don't know if you ever, they did this show about the Unabomber on, I don't remember what it was, TNT, TBS. That was fantastic. She's in that. She's in The Good Wife. And what's funny to me, I don't know if you noticed this, but I think they did an excellent job of casting the kids as adults, because all the women, the way the hair and their face, they looked like they could be related. Yeah. Like, they did such a good job of casting. And then the little kid that they got to play young Luke, that kid is amazing.
Yes, he is.
All of the kids, like, sometimes when you have kids, you worry about them being precocious, but, like, young Luke and young Nelly were absolutely fantastic and absolutely sold being twins and would just made what kind of goes on with them as adults just even worse when you see kind of what they were like when they were young and then in Hill House. Okay, so Luke, Oliver Jackson Cohen, he's been in, let's see, actually nothing that I've seen him in, but he was really good. But to me, Theodora was kind of the standout.
Yes.
Kate Siegel, and she was in Hush. She was Maddie in Hush. She was in Gerald's Game briefly, but and then she was in Oculus. She was Marisol in Oculus, which was also a Mike Flanagan joint. I thought she was absolutely fantastic. Like, and then Nelly, who was kind of the almost, I think her and Luke kind of were like this almost the spiritual part, like anchor of the show. She barely has been in anything. This was like her her first big thing. But I mean, it's got scares. It's got more. I mean, The Haunting of Hill House, the book itself, is more of like a psychological thriller and less of like a straight up horror movie. And this is very much in the same vein. It's just that it uses ghosts and stuff. But at the same time, all I'm going to say is the episode. So Nellie sees this ghost in her dreams called the Bent Neck Lady. And I don't know about you, but the episode in which you find out what the deal is with the bent neck lady, that fucked my, I had to like not watch it after that. That I
teared up at this show.
I cannot. Yes. I mean, the episode about the bent neck lady, I can't think of a better use of horror to play on. Like, like, horror can be used in so many ways, so many great ways, but, like, in terms of, like, actually playing on your emotions to make you feel sad about a character, not, like, scared for or worried about, but, like, heartbroken is the word I'm going to come back to. That episode just fucked me up. I was like, now, you had tweeted that the show just made you, like, flip your table or whatever. Like, what was...
I was going to bring that up.
Okay.
That's a different episode.
Okay.
Because I'm not one who appreciates or enjoys jump scares all that much. I think they're pretty cheap.
Yeah.
So, and it's just because you didn't scare me. That was a loud noise.
You startled me. Yeah, that's different. I can be startled by a car horn.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah. Like, that's easy to do, right? But there's a jump scare, and I'm not going to say what episode it's in. It's not the Bent Neck Lady episode. There's a jump scare in this show, and it comes at the perfect moment to do that, because I was so into the conversation that was going on, and I was, full disclosure, watching it with earbuds in.
Oh, so
this is all I could hear. And then this thing happened, and the MacBook almost went off the desk. I almost fell out of my chair. Like, I was not prepared. It's the most effective jump scare in the history of media for me, like any media.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, I don't want to spoil it because I don't. It's worth going into it cold.
Mm-hmm.
But there, and we'll talk about this offline. There was a time. It was just a small touch. That when I saw it, it just was like, it's just like someone just kind of grabbing your heart and just squeezing it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a jump scare, and it wasn't a horror thing. It was a horror. It was more of a real life horror, right? Like, so like horror movies, like I've talked about this before. Maybe I don't know if I have on this show or not. Like The Babadook is one of my favorite horror movies, but also one of my least favorite because, so when my daughter was really young, she had not only she had developmental delays, she had sensory issues, and we didn't know what was wrong. And she would cry. She would cry from the moment she got up to the moment she got to bed. My wife actually one time recorded it because the pediatrician wouldn't believe us. And she brought it in and she was like, "You fucking hear this? Like, this is all day." And we did not know what this was before we had her diagnosed. So we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know if she was sick or she just was pissed off all the time. And when we would go to the doctor and be like, "She cries all the time." And they're like, "Yeah, that's normal." We're like, "No, it's not normal. She's like 15, 16 months. She shouldn't." And they're like, "No, it's fine." And that aspect of the Babadook where this kid he's on the spectrum. And so the mother is just like, "I don't know. I'm losing my mind. I don't know if this is real. I don't know if he has something wrong. If the thing he's talking about," like, that feeling is an absolute awful way to feel. And that is, in many ways, the reason that movie was kind of so effective for me is because of that. It touched on those fears and not knowing what's going on. And then you actually have then the supernatural aspect to it, which makes it even worse. Yeah. So in this case, there was and I'll talk to you about it when we're done, but there is a scene.
I think I know which one.
In this, when there's a thing that happens and it just breaks your heart. And it was just, it was masterful because I never would have thought of it. I never would have thought to do it.
Well, that's exactly the way. That's the word I don't know if I tweeted it or not, but it's absolutely the way I feel about the show. It is masterful. Like, I know people who read, and I read about the book a lot today. Mm-hmm. But I know people who read the book and were expecting maybe a little bit of that. Or upset about the show, but
yeah, like Holly Green from she was on Jumping the Shark. She writes for Paste and a lot of places. She absolutely hated the show in some ways because of the way they changed stuff at the end. And you know, I get that. And,
yeah, because
I'm glad I hadn't read the book first. To be honest,
same here. Because when you told me that, I was like, huh. So I went and started reading about the book today, and I was like, yeah, I could see that, especially if you really enjoyed the book, because this is a Mike Flanagan himself even said this is like a remixed version, like a really loose adaptation. It's not an adaptation. It's like a remixed version of the story with similarly named characters. He's like, I get that. He gets that criticism, and he's not shy. You know, he doesn't like, he's not like all shitty about it. He gets that. And he's like, yeah, that's 100%. That's a gripe that you could have.
And I think if you're going to do loosely remix, then don't take prose word for word and then change one thing. I think that was some people's, particularly at the end. But anyway, but it was fantastic. Like, so when I watch shows, I typically kind of bounce between things. I like to have like two shows like on Netflix, and I just kind of go between the two of them. And if something is for me is really good, then I just won't stop watching it. Like, a perfect example is the last, like, even though I've seen, like, I watch it when it's on, like when The Expanse is available to stream, it is very rare for me to like go, all right, I'm just gonna bounce between it, because that show is so good. And this show was the same way. Like, I just got to a point where, and not necessarily because we were going to talk about it, I just got to a point where I was like, I just need to see what happens because of I just feel like I need to know kind of what is going on and what's going to happen. So now, I had said that, hey, this show ended on a high note, and you texted me and were like, did it? Like, what did you – I'm just curious what your thinking is in that regard.
So I don't know that I could talk about it without spoiling it, and I hate to do that.
Okay, but we'll mention it real quick then.
Just that there's something that said in the show that I felt like was probably like, because I was just sitting there like, oh shit, because obviously, you know, you know the house is what's causing all this stuff, right?
Right.
But generally, even when that's considered to be the case, you don't necessarily consider the house as a character.
Right.
And
I think you can. Like The Overlook and The Shining, The Overlook is absolutely a character.
Sure, sure. And that's exactly what it made me think of when I caught sort of once this happened, like, and it's in the finale when a character says a certain thing and I'm just like, holy shit. This is like he loved The Shining and he read Hill House and was like, yeah, I could do that. And because the house being a character, being a monster, I thought was such a fucking cool concept.
Right.
And then with the Red Room and all that, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, okay, that's a fucking, while it appears to be a not,
I think I see where you're, I think I see what you mean. Yeah. I think I see what you mean without getting into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and what's
we'll
funny
talk afterwards.
Yeah, what's funny is when you talk about The Shining, like you want to talk about a book that like a movie that was still great but like completely like The Shining absolutely changes the whole dynamic of Jack Torrance and Danny, because in the book there's a moment where Jack comes out at the end. And he regains control, for lack of a better word, and starts, because whatever has a hold of him starts beating in his own face with a hammer, with a sledgehammer, and is telling Danny, get the fuck out of here. Well, you don't get that in the movie.
No.
Once Jack goes in the movie, he's just gone, baby.
Yep.
He's gone. And so I think that there's, you know, and I think there's, I can understand absolutely, like I'd never tell anybody that their feelings about a particular thing are, you know, wrong. If you don't like something, you don't like it. And I get, you know, why, you know, if folks who were definitely attached to the book and then kind of were like wanted, you know, if not a more straightforward, but at least something that they felt was in line with the book, why they wouldn't like this. But I also, you know, for me, I'm really glad I hadn't read the book first, because now I want to, and not because I want to compare it. I just want to see kind of what the differences are. But I mean, like, I, you know, we talk about, I think horror movies, sometimes people slag them off because they go, well, it's just, you know, there's no, you know, when your only intention is just to scare people, like, you can be lazy. And some horror movies are lazy. You absolutely can be lazy with how you scare people. But I think this movie shows that, you know, you can be scary and have a heart. And you can use horror to show that a ghost can absolutely be the least scary thing that somebody can experience.
Yeah.
And so I'm so glad it was on. I mean, I would have watched it anyway, but man, it was just fucking great. Like, just absolutely. But just be prepared, because you're going to get fucking kicked in the chest. Like, every episode.
Several times. You're right. There's, and I will say this too, and I don't want to spoil things, but Mike Flanagan is really active on Twitter, and if you don't follow him, he's definitely worth a follow. And also, the Hill House show's account is well worth a follow, because there's so many things in the show that I guess people aren't catching on to.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, to the extent that there's so many little things in the background that you maybe didn't notice, like people haven't been catching, that the Twitter feed for the show will just give you like season one, episode three, 4 minutes, 38 seconds.
Really?
And like they want you to go and look and really look and see what you maybe didn't see.
Oh,
and it's really cool.
God damn it. All right.
Yeah. And then there's another thing. I don't know if it's comicbook.com or something else that caught on to a theme within the first five episodes or so, because, you know, the first five basically focus on each one of the kids.
Yeah.
And there's a theme there also, that whenever this website caught it and did the article, Flanagan was like, good catch. Nobody had caught that yet. It's deep, man.
We need to get Mike Flanagan on this show.
I'm telling you, I'm all about it, dude. And then another thing this show did, and I don't know if you remember this, it reminded me. When you said about Holly being not liking the show because of the book, and I started reading about the book, it reminded me of a movie that I saw in the theater in 1999 with Catherine Zeta-Jones, Liam Neeson, Luke Wilson, called The Haunting.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely based on The Haunting of Hill House.
Is it really?
Yes. I didn't know that.
I did not either.
When I was reading about the synopsis of the book, I was like, this is familiar to me, but I know I haven't seen it or read it. And then I remembered that movie. And I was like, well, fuck me. I need to watch this movie again. And I ordered the book from Amazon. So I'm like, I'm all about it right now.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I'm the same way. I'm actually reading, I've been reading all of Stephen King's books, and I thought I was done, but then he had written a book with his son, Owen, and it's actually really good. It's called Sleeping Beauties. I highly recommend it. It's really good. It's about the world, like women fall asleep and they get wrapped up in these cocoons, and if you try to take the cocoon off of their face, they will kill you. And so it's about this town the Appalachia country and kind of what's going on there, and it's really good. Highly recommend it. But yeah, so anyway. But yeah, I want to read this when I'm done with that. Okay, cool. So we'll need to make sure that we wrap real quick after the show. Yeah. Okay. Last but certainly not least. So not only did we get to see Halloween, but we got to see Halloween together. Mitch had said, hey, you know, let's make this happen, where we can, so we each drove an hour to beautiful Noonan, Georgia, and went to one of the nicest theaters,
either one of us ever.
Like, we didn't know that it was a fancy theater. I was just like, hey, there's a Regal in Noonan, we should go to it. And then we get there, and Mitch was like, you know, there's people ahead of us, and Mitch was like, you can pick your seat. And I was like, what? And so then we you know, bought the tickets, and they're like, what seats do you want? And I was like, what the fuck? And then we get there, and it was the fancy recliner seats, which not only was comfortable, but was hilarious, because at the beginning of the movie, all you heard was, which was a sound of 1,000 recliners, leather scraping leather, at the most inopportune time. But you know, it was great. Like, we don't get a chance to see each other very often because, I mean, you know, we're a few hours away. Last time would have been, was it Kevin Smith or your birthday? I don't remember which one. Oh, cause your birthday. So to get a chance for a movie that, you know, obviously we're both big fans of the franchise, and then, but just to have, it was awesome. Like, it was a great day, beautiful day. We got burgers at Five Guys. We saw
the cast of The Hills Have Eyes.
Whenever Mitch, of late, it seems like whenever Mitch and I are together, we just attract the strangest people. This was no different. So we got some good stories out of it, had a blast together. Like, I was really glad that we were able to do that. Thank you so much for suggesting it, because I never would have thought about it. So
that's the highlight of my 2018. The more I think about it, I'm just like, fuck,
yeah, man. It was fun. It was a really good time.
That was a great fucking time. We had good food.
Yep.
And like you said, we have stories that we'll tell forever, and the movie was fucking great. And it was just a good day.
Right. So, that being said, Halloween 2018. So, jettisoning everything since the original Halloween.
Yep.
So, you know, Laurie Strode is not, you know, Michael Myers' brother. You know, all the Thorn cult or whatever the hell, all that shit is gone. It's just you take everything between Halloween and now, and you get rid of it, and this movie picks up. And honestly, I think it was the better for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and not to shit on all the other ones, because I enjoy most of them. There's only one or two that I outright don't like. But for a new entry into the franchise 40 years later, the only other thing I could see that they maybe could have done was to try to play off of the end of Part 2. But the end of Part 2 is like, even in and of itself is just so, it was obvious that was when Myers was supposed to end. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and that's because Carpenter wanted to do the whole thing where the right. Halloween was just the umbrella title and they did.
Yeah, it was an anthology.
Stories.
Yep.
Right. So two was clearly supposed to be the end of Myers. So it makes sense 40 years later that we're doing this shit again. Let's just pick up where the first one ends and tell the story of these characters after 40 years.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way to have done it.
Yeah. 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 And you know, and I think we do need to spoil it a little bit. I mean, I don't want to, but I feel like we have to because I'll try to do it in very vague terms. But there's a revelation about two-thirds of the way through the movie that you and I initially were both concerned with regarding the psychiatrist or that had been treating Michael Myers in prison.
Sartain.
And the revelation that you find out about him, to me, cast the earlier events in a different light. Like, maybe he had something to do with all of it. Do you think that was the case?
I certainly, especially the prison, the bus,
yeah,
the bus sequence.
Yeah.
While it didn't show that, and he even gets fucking shot. Sorry, spoiler. But, you know, it doesn't even appear at that time, never appears that that's the case. But then when that happens, you're just like, oh, shit.
But even I mean, here. So the idea is that so here's the idea is that, you know, these, you know, kind of think Serial, the podcast, or, you know, like Making a Murderer, like all these kind of true crime things that have now kind of exploded into popular view. These British and. You know, he says, "We have a podcast," and she says, "We're investigative journalists." You know,
right, like, right.
And that was hilarious.
Yes.
You know, they want to do an episode on Michael Myers because it's been, you know, 40 years or however many years it's been since he came back to Haddonfield.
Yep.
And you know, he manages to get the mask from the Attorney General's office,
right,
and shows it to Michael, and it's kind of, you get the impression from that kind of set Michael off, and he then escapes. He's being transferred to a maximum security prison away from the psychiatric facility where he's been. The bus goes wrong, it crashes, he gets out and heads back to Haddonfield. So what are the odds that a podcaster is going to get his hands on, if not the most, like, that'd be like, I mean, when you think of like serial killer things, I can't even think of anything.
Right. Like the knife that like killed Sharon Tate or something like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean? Right. Yes. Oh, my phone's ringing. Well, we'll just got to power through.
Yeah, let's just keep going. But it's a movie. That's the thing. There, these people, these fucking, and it kills my soul because they claim to be these like elitist Halloween, you know, they just worship the franchise and all these things, and they're just ripping this movie to shreds. What did you want? Like, what did you expect?
Right.
They're like, well, he wouldn't have gotten the mask. Probably not. Like, why are you looking for logic in this? Just enjoy the fucking movie. It's just a movie, right? And the same thing. It's like, okay, well, yeah, if you want to sit there and be like, why has Michael been chained up in this one place for 40 years and today, 40 years to the date, they're like, yeah, we got to move him. But you don't. You can just, like, leave
him
there.
You just be okay with it. Yeah.
Like, what's the point? You know what I mean? But there's some, it's like, they're like, oh, well, there's so many plot points that exist just to make character A move to place B. Well, I mean, that's fine.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that.
I don't either. I will say, and one of the things that I actually laughed at, because I think it's absolutely true, is so at one point, Laurie Strode, you know, obviously played by Jamie Lee Curtis, did an amazing job. You know, Laurie's basically lived her entire life, she's traumatized by what happened, preparing for Michael to come back. She's the only person who seems to understand that this guy wasn't done.
Yeah. She's Sarah Connor.
And right, she's Sarah Connor. And I think she did a fantastic job, but unfortunately, you know, and they did a, you know, when you kind of figure, well, what would that do to a person? If that person then had a child, how would she raise that person? I thought they did a fantastic job of kind of laying out you know, what that could possibly look like. And then Judy Greer played her daughter, who was just like, I don't understand any of this. I just wanted a mom. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be doing target practice when I was 9 or 10. She did a great job too. And, you know,
she was great.
Like, she's been kind of the wacky support. Like, I think of the Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. And she's a really good actress. And I think to finally kind of get the opportunity to not just be, you know, that kind of side role was great.
Yep. And interestingly enough, like the other movie that I think of for her that I think is a standout performance, and it's because she's given an opportunity to be something other than a side character, is Cursed, which everybody fucking hates.
I'll have to watch that one. I don't know that one.
Yeah, the Wes Craven werewolf movie.
Okay.
She's fucking fantastic in it.
Yeah. But the one thing that I laughed at because I thought it was true is, so early on in the movie, Allison, which is Laurie's granddaughter, and her friend and her friend's boyfriend, Dan or Dave or whatever his name is, they're kind of talking about, you know, the night that, you know, Michael attacked everybody, and they, you know, Dan, Dave, whatever his name is, he's like, oh, I heard it was your, you know, her brother, and like, oh, no, that was made up. But he says, and I thought this was hilarious, because do you know there's a comedian named Kyle Kinane? Do you know him?
Yes.
Okay. So Dan, Dave, whatever his name is, he says, well, he only killed 5 people. Like, that's not that big of a deal. And Kyle Kinane has this absolutely fantastic bit about going to England and going on a Jack the Ripper tour. And he says, you know, so we're walking along, and I'm not going to do a great job of it, but it's off of his, it's not Whiskey Icarus, it's the album after that, or maybe it's the second one after that. And he says that, you know, so they spend 90 minutes on this tour or whatever, and they finally get to the end, and the tour guide says, you know, and you know, all told, Jack the Ripper is believed to have killed 5 victims. And he says, I know, this is a weird time to experience national pride. He's like, when I turned to my friend and I said, 5 victims? 5 victims? There are people in America right now that have 5 people dead in their basements. And he's absolutely right. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, when you hear, oh, somebody killed 5 people, you're like, what the fuck? 5? Get the fuck out of here. I mean, unless they are all in a stew, who gives a shit, you know? And so when I heard that, I thought, I actually laughed, because I was like, you know, he's kind of right. Like,
yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he's kind of right. Like, I don't want to say that because it seems mean, but he's also kind of right. But I agree with you. Like, you know, the problem is, and we talked about this, that we were worried about this happening. And we both, without spoiling it, we both kind of shared this worry at the same place in the movie. Nowadays, there's this tendency to want to just over-explain everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes things happen for – there isn't necessarily a reason. Mm-hmm. So Michael Myers killing people doesn't need to be a reason. He doesn't have to be possessed. No. It doesn't have to be, you know –
Yeah, that's the problem with Rob Zombie's one.
Right.
It's half of a good movie.
Right.
And it's when Michael's grown and gets the mask and is doing the Michael shit that we all remember from the original. But the really, really awful part of that movie is the origin and the white trash and the dialogue and it's so offensive and just unnecessary. And it ends up, I don't know, like some people may like it, but it spoils the movie for me. For Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah, I mean for me I'm not one of these people who is like, well, there's a reason for everything. I actually feel like that's worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to think that there's a, like, when you think of like all the horrible things that can happen to people, to go, oh, there was a reason for that. Like, it'd be better if there wasn't a reason.
Yeah.
And in the same way, I almost feel like Michael Myers is more terrifying to not have a reason to be doing these things. Like, he's like a shark. Like, he's just a killing machine. And that was one of the things I loved about this movie, is when he makes it back to Haddonfield, the way he moves through the town and just fucking picks things up, brutalizes people, moves on to the next one. There's no thought to it. There's no There's no greater purpose other than he kills. That's what he does. See, he's here. He doesn't have, you know, he's not fulfilling a mission, or he's not driven by anything other than just the desire to kill. And he's going to just do it when it becomes available. And there's a time in the movie where they make you feel like he's going to, and I don't mind spoiling this, they make you feel like he's going to kill a baby.
Yeah,
and I thought, oh shit, he's killing that fucking baby. Yeah. And I won't get into whether he actually does, but the fact that I could think to my, because I mean, there's certain things in horror movies where, you know, they're not going to do that, but because of something that happened earlier in the movie, which is hilarious, it dances in my heart, Dad. You know, they
talk about that too, because people bitch about the humor, but keep going.
No, and what they did early on in the movie is make you feel as if there was really nothing that was going to be out of bounds for Michael Myers, and there shouldn't be.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing about his character that would lead you to believe that he would discriminate one way or the other. It seems to me the way they've kind of done it is it is completely opportunity. If he decides to kill you, he's fucking killing you. That's it. Right there.
Yep. Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with the humor. I thought the humor did a good job of kind of punctuating things in a way.
Absolutely. It was subtle, and it wasn't the entire movie. And when it was there, it wasn't slapsticky. It was just genuinely funny shit that characters would say. The fucking cops with the pudding and the brownies stuff.
Oh, yeah. That was.
It's so fucking funny, and it's not out of place.
Right.
Because these are two police officers who, you know, they're just their post was to watch the driveway.
Right.
And they're sitting there just chatting like they always do every night when probably nothing happens in this small fucking town.
And they're busting on each other.
Yeah. And we get to witness a little bit of what their daily routine is like. And it's fucking hilarious.
And the kid who's being babysat, I thought he was great, especially because at the end he noped the fuck out. He's like, I am not good for you, kid. He's like, fuck that. I'm out of here.
Yeah, he was great. The other kid was great. I just got dance in my heart. That was so fucking funny.
And I loved, you know, and here's the reason why I loved that interaction. So basically, so this is the father and son who stumbles across the bus crash. They kind of pattern it like this typical, the dad's like, oh, I want to hunt. That was my dad. And honestly, if I had been this kid and dance had been available to me, dance would have been in my heart too. And they don't. One of the things I liked about it is the father just – he doesn't understand, but he's not dismissive, and he's not like, well, you're a shitty kid. He just doesn't get it, which I totally understand as both as a parent and as a son who was into things that my dad would never really understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love that conversation because the dad wasn't shitty about it. He just was like, well, what do you mean? What, you don't want to go hunting? Like, he just doesn't get it. He's like, why wouldn't you want to go hunting? And the kid's just like, yeah, I got dance in my heart. And I mean, and it just, it was a small thing, but you know, a lot of times in these movies, you know, the father would be like, you're a fucking pussy. You know, I mean, they would take that opportunity to kind of like, you know, denigrate the kid, and they don't do that. And I love that the movie won. I mean, and it was funny. It was funny. Like, if you're a parent, your kid the tells you that you would be like, what so the good. Fuck? Like,
I know. That kid delivered that line so fucking well.
And not because you're making fun of your kid, but because as a parent, sometimes your kid says shit that just kind of knocks you back on your heels, not in a bad way, but just more of like a, wait, what? And that's what it was. And so I love that bit. Like, I love that conversation because it felt like, to me, it just felt kind of funny and genuine and sweet. Like, the dad just really didn't get it, but he wasn't being an asshole about it.
And it was, and the other thing about it, it's sort of an interesting sort of twist on that type of a relationship is that generally it would have been the dad who didn't go hunting that day because he had to go watch the kid dance.
Right.
The kid's like, Dad.
Right.
I mean, that's fine on the weekends. We can go hunting, but I've got dance class, and dance is in my heart.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Yes.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
And people bitch about it. I was like, what the fuck, man?
You know what? Here's – I think that – I feel like for these movies and what happens is – you know, and obviously I get it. Like, folks – and we've seen this, right? Like we've seen this. And I feel like it's gotten worse, and I don't know if it's just simply because it's a lot more visible now. Like back in the day, you know, you had no way of expressing your opinions as to what you wanted and didn't want, right? Like if you didn't like something, you would tell your friends about it, but there was no like online platform to air your grievances. You know, it seems to me, and we've seen this like particularly with like, you know, like The Last Jedi, and then really any time something that's been around for a while kind of comes back around. You know, this notion that a new entry or a new chapter in something that folks have loved for a while that they don't like somehow invalidates or makes the previous entry or part of it disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely don't understand that. Like a perfect
either.
Example, you know, to me is the Harry Potter books, right? Like I love the Harry Potter books. I love the Harry Potter movies. I absolutely do not give a fuck about Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. I don't know. I've never seen it. I don't care about it. It just doesn't hold my interest. If they did shit in that series that somehow makes whatever changes something about Harry Potter, well, I don't care because Harry Potter is still there. I can still go watch it. I can still go read it. It doesn't matter. And this idea that, you know, if something new happens that you don't like, that somehow, one, it has to be specifically for you because you have a vision in your head of how things are supposed to be, but also it somehow invalidates the thing you liked before. I just genuinely don't understand that. Like Hill House is a perfect example. I totally understand. If you love the book and then you watch the TV show and you were disappointed that the TV show wasn't what you wanted it to be and you didn't like it at all, I get that. But the moment you say it ruined the book for me, that's where you lose me.
Yeah.
Because you can still go read it.
Yeah,
you can still enjoy it. You can just go, you know what? Fuck that show. I'm not having anything to do with that. This is the thing I like. And I still have it. I can go back to it. I can still revisit the things about it that enjoys me. Or that I enjoy. Sorry. It enjoys me too, honestly.
It does. It told me.
I had a thing and I fucked it up. And so I feel like that's kind of like you're way more in tune to the horror kind of community and what people like and don't like than I do.
Yeah, I'm getting less and less every day, man.
And I don't, you know, I understand, again, I understand disappointment. I do. I mean, we've all had situations where we're like, wow, I'm really excited about this thing. And then you watch it and it just doesn't do it for you.
Right.
But the idea that it somehow makes what had come before it like worse, I don't get that.
Nope.
And I also, I mean, you know, I think you could kind of look, like, I can't wait to see the Suspiria remake. I do need to watch, I need to find the original and watch it. Because
yeah,
I think this is...
I'm surprised you haven't, I didn't know you realized you hadn't seen it.
Yeah, I know, I'm a poser.
No, I just didn't know. Like, I just, you know, it's just one of those things. We never talked about it. So
right.
I
think that, you know, there's a case to be made that, you know, Suspiria, the remake, seems to be kind of doing different things, and you know, you can argue whether they're more interesting with Suspiria, whereas, you know, Halloween, it's not a remake, but it very much sticks to a particular it sticks closer to the original Halloween than maybe some folks wanted, but at the same time it probably didn't stick closely enough.
Yeah, it's weird. That's the other thing. I'm like, people that complain about, I don't want to do it because number one, I don't really give a shit, and number two, like, I don't have that kind of time. But like, for the people who bitched and complained about certain aspects, I'd be like, well, how would you have done it? You know what I mean? Like, what did they do that you would have done so differently? How would you have flipped the script there?
Right.
Because I didn't have a problem with any of it. And like you said, the one thing that was sort of concerning, it went away almost as quickly as it became a thing. So, what would you have done? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, and I me too. Like, because I mean, you know, the idea that I don't know either. Because I mean, you know, they always you know, that was the thing, right? The tagline of Halloween is the night he came home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. it doesn't make sense to be anything other than that.
Right. The one thing that we didn't touch on yet that I did want to mention, though, is that in his 40 years of you know, solitude and confinement, Michael's a lot angrier than he was like in 1978, because holy shit, is he brutal in this movie?
Yeah, like, which makes sense. You would think
I don't know about you, but I didn't catch a whole lot of CG. Like, it was, the effects were really good.
They were very good.
Lots of practical effects. And for as much of the kills as we got to see happen, because everything didn't happen off camera. You got to see some shit.
Yeah.
And
there was a few times where you and I were both like, oh
yeah, Jesus. and then there were other times where you didn't necessarily see the kill, but later on you saw the aftermath, and it was still like, oh
yeah,
shit.
And homages to the first one.
Yeah. And the one in particular that I think we're both talking about, like, you're just like, Jesus fuck, man. Yeah. Like, that dude's like a pretzel. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. 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 And I really enjoyed it. And I mean, you said, you know, that night, cause we played Destiny that night. You were like, I want to see it again. And yeah, I did too. I really did too. And it was, you know, like my horror upbringing was much, much less slasher movies and more like supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, like your Friday the 13th, your Halloween, I kind of came to that stuff later. I mean, I was definitely more.
I did too. My horror, everybody thinks I've been like horror my whole life. I haven't. Like, I remember vividly being a very small child, and my father would watch Halloween, Halloween 2, uh-huh. Salem's Lot. He would rent Nightmare on Elm Street and
David's
shit. And I would want to watch it, but it also terrified me. So I have so many memories. I watched so many of these movies in brief glimpses where I would stand in the kitchen and I could peek into the den and see the television.
Yeah.
But as soon as it got too scary, I ran back to the other end of the house.
Right.
And it wasn't until, man, I was probably, I don't know, 12, 13 maybe, that I started renting old movies at the video store, and this shit kind of started to appeal. Like Jason X, like I said, not Jason X, fuck. Jason Lives, my favorite movie of all time, is the
great
one.
Movie.
It's because it got me into horror.
Yeah.
That's why it's my favorite movie. It's not the best movie ever made, but it is to me.
Yeah. I mean, for me, two small things. One was, I remember watching the original thing, The Thing, with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it said the end, and there was a question mark. And I was like, Poppy, what does that mean? And he's like, well, that means that maybe it's not the end. And the idea that it's not over, that right there was enough. Yeah. But
it could be here by now.
Exactly. But when we lived in Virginia, my dad, he wouldn't get home because he worked in D.C. So, you know, he wouldn't get home from work until well after 6 o'clock. So every day there would be a different movie on from 4 to 6. And I watched Psycho one day. Mm-hmm. And mom, she was fine. She wasn't like, whatever. And I remember just being 100% glued to my seat for that movie. The scene when the chair turns around and there's a skeleton in it, honestly, that was not the scariest scene to me. The scariest scene to me was Norman talking to himself saying, you know, oh, I'm not going to hurt this fly. And then they'll look at me and say, well, look at him. He wouldn't even hurt a fly. That right there, you want to talk about where horror started for me? It was that movie, right? It was that day right there, understanding that I could have the shit scared out of me and be happier than I've ever been.
Yeah. Yep.
And then it just went from there.
Damn, that's such a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so Halloween, you know what? Whatever. I don't know what people would have wanted. For me, it was great. It was what I wanted out of it. And especially for folks you know, both the director and the writer, who are not particularly horror people. I don't know if maybe that's kind of sometimes what it takes.
Yeah.
Is you get some folks who aren't,
well,
you know,
it's interesting, right? So Danny McBride obviously is a fan, and David Gordon Green apparently was like a mega fan, which I didn't know. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And maybe sometimes it takes people who don't traditionally do horror to, I mean, you look at Get Out, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So
exactly.
But I'm just, you know, I'm just happy that we live in a time when this movie can make $91 million on the opening weekend.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And they're over 100 now. So
yeah. And it's not all just, you know, Insidious Chapter 12. And honestly, I need to watch, Happy Death Day, because that trailer for the second one looked fucking hilarious.
I'm telling you, man, that one grew on me. Like, I know I briefly talked about it, and I wasn't crazy about it when we did do the episode of the show, but then my son wanted to watch it, and I was like, it's not over the top gory, there's no nudity. I was like, all right, fine. So we watched it, and I was like, I liked it the second time.
Yeah, the trailer for the second one looks really, really funny.
Yeah, and the first one was too. I just, I don't know. Maybe I was in a mood that week. I don't know.
It happens.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. So that's three. I mean, even though we weren't like super thrilled with Apostle, that's kind of, I feel bad for it, because any other week it would have been
right.
Probably, I mean, top of the list.
Look what it's up against this time.
Right. Exactly. So you got four things you need to do. One, you need to watch the Jason X episode of Synecdochological. Yes. Two, you need to watch Apostle. Three, you need to put aside 10 hours for Haunting a Hill House and get a box of tissues and a bottle of bourbon. And then you need to go to the theater and you need to watch Halloween.
Please go to the theater like everybody else is. This is what, like you said, what a fucking time to be alive. We got Michael Myers in the theaters again.
Yep.
But we got in the theater making hundreds of millions of dollars. Good God, man.
Right.
If you bitch about mainstream horror being shit for however long it was, it's fucking back.
Yeah.
You know, get your ass out there and watch it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just when you think of this, you know, Between a Quiet Place, Hereditary, Halloween. I mean, come on, son.
Saw Part 37 wasn't out this October. It's goddamn Halloween.
Exactly.
Halloween is out this fucking October.
Right. Absolutely. So that's it for us. I don't know what we're going to do next show. We'll figure out something.
We'll talk about these three again. I don't give a fuck.
Apparently, I need to rewatch Haunting a Hill House because I missed everything.
Yeah.
but this has been episode 58 divided by werewolves. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, or you can catch me streaming most nights at 7 p.m. Eastern between Destiny 2, Divinity 2. I'm sure we'll start up some RDR at some point soon. You can hang out with us however you choose to. We appreciate you listening. We hope that you will be with us in the next 2 weeks. So for myself and Mitch, thank you again. Good night, and have a good night.